What's up, everybody? My name is Matt Dezen, and thank you so much for tuning into the Nintendo Fever podcast. We're going to have a fun-filled show, but at first, I want to introduce my wonderful co-host as Ollie. How are you doing, Holly?
I'm doing great. How are you?
And then we also have an amazing special guest this week, Harrison. We're going to talk about where you came from in just a minute, but how you doing?
Salutations there, Matt, and of course, good to see you again, Holly. I'm doing quite fine. Glad actually we got this time zone situation figured out in terms of
yes.
just... I don't know. It's the podcast that I'm on. It's a little difficult because it's not necessarily two time zones to deal with. I deal with an ocean in terms of scheduling because.
Like 6 hour difference.
Yeah, that's a. This is a little nice change of pace. Not that I don't hate that right now or hate being with my co-host. It's just I hate the body of water that just. Basically ruins our scheduling. But again, I'm glad to be on here.
We're going to try and make sure that we keep you at a sane, normal hour for recording reasons. But this is, of course, episode number 62. We have a fun-filled, complete agenda, which means we're going to have to try and move a little bit quicker, but we'll spend enough time on every segment that we're capable of doing. We're going to be talking about some Pokemon news. We're going to be talking about what we've been playing with our own two hands. We're going to talk about some Nintendo news. That's right. Not rumors for once, but actual hard cold news, and then we're going to have a special feature about an E3 retrospective from all the way back in 2015. So we're going to have a fun-filled show, but first and foremost, Holly, let's go ahead and talk about what we did last week, which was the Who's That Pokemon. You gave away a couple of details to the listeners to guess what the Pokemon was, and who was that Pokemon that you were talking about?
So last week, episode 61, the Pokemon that I described briefly for the listeners out there was Lantern. So congrats if you were listening to the show and without even looking it up, guessed in your head like Lantern, that's totally Lantern.
That's a terrible name for a Pokemon, right? Like normally their names are like based on the things that they look like and like are, but then they're like slightly miscued into like a different sounding name. But like,
did you actually look Lantern up after last week's episode?
I didn't. I'm assuming he looks like a lantern. Am I wrong in that?
Well, sort of. It's a kind of fish-shaped Pokemon.
Oh, he's a fish-shaped Pokemon.
The lantern. What is that fish under the? It's actually under the sea that actually
has the Nemo fish.
It's got the...
Well, no, it's from Finding Nemo. Remember when the dad goes way down in the deep with Dory and they almost get eaten by it? That's what you're talking about, right?
Okay, yeah. What is that fish called, though? That's kind of what it's inspired by.
It's called a nightmare.
Okay.
It's what I call it. A nightmare of my dreams.
Here's how unversed I am in certain bits of Pokemon, certain gens. I assumed that Lantern was that chandelier-looking ghost Pokemon that we had... I can't think of the name for the life of me.
I think his name is Chandelier.
Chandelure.
Wow.
Chandelure, yes. I typed in Shand on my Google search, and it literally, that was the first thing that came up was Chandelure.
Because Pokemon is more important than anything else.
Nothing else in the world.
Everything that you type is going to end up bringing up a Pokemon before you even finish typing it.
Well, I will say, my first look at Lantern, yeah, he is a little adorable looking. then again, there's a lot of Pokemon that are that. It's better than when I first found out about Garbodor, when I was like, oh, what is this Pokemon? It sounds pretty awesome. Like, it's just garbage.
Garbage, oh my goodness. Yeah, there have been some duds in the Pokemon universe, I won't lie.
There is.
But yep, last week's Pokemon was Lantern.
There is a terrible-looking Pokemon based around everything that's ever been. It's like
at this point, yes.
It's like rule Pokemon. Like, if there is something that exists, there is a Pokemon of it.
Yeah, but we'll be talking about Pokemon a little bit more later on. So
yes, we will. But we're gonna have a very small, brief segment about what we've been playing, just because I've been playing a game that I at least want to give a couple of cents of my own about. Same with Harrison and Holly. So I'm gonna let Harrison you go first, actually. And before you say the game that you've been playing a little bit of, please also let us know what is the podcast that we can check you out on a regular basis.
Yes, thank you, guys. Once again, thank you for having me on the show here, and frequent listener, and of course, you know, I have heard so many good things basically coming out through here, and I mean, just continue ongoing the good work, but yes, the podcast that I currently do right now is called Nintendo Voice, and you can find us at, you know, nintendovoice.com, or just type us into iTunes through Nintendo Voice. And this is not to be confused with Nintendo Voice Chat from IGN, the other wonderful, you know, Nintendo-centric podcast.
Is that like a major website, IGN? Is that what you said? Or is that like a little boutique-type website? I'm not sure if I'm familiar with it.
It may or may not be a site that I've applied to many times over the last 7 years and gotten denied.
Well, then they're not cool enough for us to even notice.
They have
That's
poor
what I'm
taste.
Saying.
Poor taste.
Yeah. But you can, it's the life of basically when it comes to writing. I mean, that's one thing I've noticed since graduating from, like, I went to journalism school, and since then it's like, oh, you're not good enough. But I come with peace here because of, with, you know, the podcast that I do. I feel like that's the one thing I do each week that at least kind of lifts up my spirits of just, you know, not having a writing job. But yeah, this is, the podcast that we do right now is Nintendo Voice, hence with its name called Your Voice for Everything Nintendo. And it is done by two of my good friends, Colin Crompton and Lewis Pugh, both of which have Holly knows very well from us, and that's because we were from our Infendo days.
Yep.
And it just seems like when I do anything, whether or not it's connection with Holly, it just feels like it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like, oh wow, Holly's connected to this person and this person through Infendo, and it's like, it just happens. But we've been doing this podcast for about a good almost the year anniversary is coming up. I'll leave, I think, next week probably, or this week when this podcast posts. But we're up to at least 45 episodes and going strong, and we've got big things kind of planned coming up for the future. But if you have time, just check it out. I mean, we do tend to be on the long side, and I try to actually make sure these episodes get very short, but we tend to ramble on a lot.
Oh, everybody does that, Matt and I included.
Yeah, I try to ramble, but Holly usually does a pretty good job of stopping me.
I try to stop him. Just kidding.
Yeah, but I mean, enough of my shameless plugs, though. Probably going from my the podcast that I run, and yeah, it's there's so many moving parts there. I mean, Lewis does such a really great job as the director of the show, and then Colin does such a fantastic job of editing, and I'm just in the back basically being the only American there, just going, hi, I get games early sometimes.
So depending on the game, apparently.
Oh, I got Fire Emblem
months before them.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, because just to roll into what I've been playing is that last week I just finished Fire Emblem Fates Conquest. My second playthrough of Fire Emblem Fates, the first being Birthright, which I had steamed through pretty well easily. And Holly, I have you at least played Birthright or Conquest?
Yeah, I've beaten Birthright, played the majority of Conquest, and actually Revelation. I'm kind of playing those side by side weirdly, which probably wasn't the best idea because I'm not getting through them very quickly. But that's my analysis of how I've been doing with the trio.
So you haven't finished Conquest, just to say that.
Right.
And I guess you could probably see with the differences between, you know, like Birthright and Conquest is that there's a lot. It's, what's to say of it? Conquest is a little bit more unforgiving.
Ah, yes.
That's what I remember hearing, is that Conquest was the extra hard version.
Yeah. Unless you pay money and get that. There's a DLC map where even in Conquest, you can actually earn experience from it every time you go through it. So you can pay to get through the game easier.
That's the thing. Oh, yeah. That's the thing with Conquest, whatever. It does not offer you that many extra missions.
Opportunities, yeah.
Yeah, opportunities to grind or anything like that. And this is the type of game where, you know, whether or not you go through with, like, support conversations and... This is what I want to say with Conquest. Like, there is no time for love in this one. Like, I whereas in Birthright, I had many, you know, marriages and...
children.
Children. Yeah, so many children. It's just like, and whereas in Conquest, it's like, I got two. That's it.
Which kids? I'm kind of curious, actually.
Corin and...
Corin's kid, which is Kana.
Yeah. Kana. That's the first... Yeah, in this case. But I went with... See, is... With Conquest, I didn't transfer over my Corin character from, you know, Birthright. I started anew because I had a male character that I named my name Harrison.
Right.
But I decided to start over, and I was like, hey, I want a female Corin. I want to play through that. And I ended up marrying Silas, I believe. That was the one.
Oh my gosh. I married Silas in Conquest as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so easy, especially since he's all like, I'm your best friend from when we were kids. It's like, oh, they were meant to be. But I'm not a huge fan of their romance, honestly, weirdly.
I know. My go-to thing for Fire and like the support conversations, I was like, okay, they might be good together, or they might. I don't necessarily go off from the first bit of conversation that I hear in supports.
Right. But, you have to go like at least two conversations in to figure out like, oh, these characters were meant for each other or not.
The one thing I do like about Fire Emblem Fates, though, is you can go into the records hall and you can actually replay some of the support conversations.
Yeah. I do that all the time. That's probably what I'm wasting my time with the most. It's just rewatching the videos and rereading the support combos. So the only two child characters you recruited were Kana and probably Sophie, I'm guessing.
Well, no, not necessarily. Well, yeah, not necessarily. Like, I'm nothing. I had those two kids, but I'm trying to think of the other marriage. Oh, I had Camilla and who is the other sword wielding retainer?
Oh goodness!
He's got a
wielding retainer. Laszlo.
Yep. That's it.
Okay. So yeah, you got Salil? I still haven't even recruited her in any path that I've taken.
Yeah, I did that, and like you said, I've tried to do as much opportunities to level up these characters. But thing is, I did kind of commit what is considered Fire Emblem sacrilege because I played through Awakening. I played through every Fire Emblem up to this point. You know, gotten through it even with characters dying. And even with the option of turning permadeath off, I still kept it with classic mode in Awakening, kept it with classic mode in Birthright. But after reading so much into Conquest, I just said, I don't have the time. I'm going with the casual mode and not Phoenix mode, or which I like to call Fire Emblem with training wheels.
Oh, yeah.
Phoenix mode?
I mean, I don't even think you have to do anything.
Actually, no, that's a bad example. Okay, not training wheels. It's Fire Emblem with a big wheel. that's basically what it is.
You literally can't tip over. You literally like can't get a game over with Phoenix mode.
Phoenix mode, you say?
Maybe I should try it out one day. I will try to play Phoenix mode and try to get a game over.
You guys make Phoenix mode sound like this terrible version, but it's legitimately making me interested in playing this game.
Well, you know about Phoenix mode, don't you, Matt?
No, this is the first time I've ever heard of Phoenix mode.
Oh, it's where your characters like they die and then they immediately come back.
During
right after
the
dying.
Same mode?
During the same turn, you mean?
Yeah, not the turn, but so immediately after the turn is over, your men come back?
That character comes back? Yep.
I see. I'm not going to say I'm terrible at RTS games, but I'm terrible at RTS games. So this game has always been very intimidating to me, but ever since playing SteamWorld Heist, I've been wanting to play a lot more tactic-style games, and I really want to play Fire Emblem, but out of worry that it would be a little bit too difficult and I would just put it down and never play it again, I kind of, you know, look the other way. But now I hear about this new mode that might be something to introduce me to the mechanics and to get me used to the basis of the game itself. That sounds kind of enticing.
Yeah. No laughing from me for anybody using Phoenix mode.
Yeah, until the podcast turns off and then you just giggle in the background.
Well, I will say, though, casual mode is probably one of the few reasons that I feel like has helped, you know, revive this franchise.
Agree, yeah.
And it's one of those things that's able to give a different audience that, you know, for a series that has been known just for a very hardcore group of people that, you know, enjoyed it, you know, and I feel like the only good example of, like, new players getting into an RTS series was Advance Wars, and Fire Emblem was just a step above in terms of difficulty, and Awakening, thankfully, with its sales and, you know, with the extended sales of Fates right now, it just amazes me how far Fire Emblem has come right now, and even Nintendo has said that Fire Emblem is actually one of their top-tier series right now.
Yeah.
Maybe the entire mobile game that's going to be released sometime this year is just going to be called, like, Fire Emblem Phoenix.
And it's, like, required Phoenix mode or something?
Well, it is. It's just a Fire Emblem game on Phoenix mode at all times.
Well, it is actually, and I didn't put this under Nintendo News, sadly, but we have found out that
DNA.
We have discovered that Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem, the mobile apps coming in fall, are going to be free to start or free to play. Free to play sounds
free, I think the way they labeled it was actually free to download, and they're going to be developed by DNA, the marketing, developers that they had partnered with, and we had heard that they were going to be making games for Nintendo. So these are going to be the first two to come out of the DNA group, because Miitomo came directly out of Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll see on that front, but mm-hmm. for now, I actually have to mention, Harrison, that I played Birthright in classic mode as well, where I lost a couple characters and, you know, just let them go. I didn't actually replay those maps, so I lost a few characters there due to classic mode. But I am exactly the same as you, not just with marrying my avatar to Silas, but also with choosing to play Conquest in casual mode. So
it's the best way to go through it. I feel like if you're the hardest of hardcore, I mean, I'm a big fan of Fire Emblem, but if you're one that has, you know, gone another way from playing, like, even import versions of Fire Emblem, which have been known to be extremely difficult,
yeah.
and even up to the ones that were finally released in the States and onward, you know, yeah, Conquest is your type of challenge, because if you notice in Birthright, though, there's not a lot of different mission types. It's usually just rout the enemy, defeat the boss, and I think the only slight difference in that is, like, oh, escape this map, which was in the Opera House area, whatever, of the Birthright, which, of course, is in all
right.
three games. Conquest, though, throws a whole wrench into the whole thing, because it's either, hey, you need to get all your units out in one area, or you need to survive for 20 turns. You know, it just flips everything on its head to a point like, oh, this doesn't sound very bad for terms of a map, but like, oh, there's a stipulation.
Yeah. I heard about that before I played the games, and I have been somewhat disappointed because there are also a lot of redundant maps in Conquest where, like, you seize, which is basically like defeat the boss. Where you go and defeat the boss and then you have somebody seize that space. There are quite a few of those, and I keep thinking, like, wait a minute, this is another seize map. Everybody's like, oh, it has so much variety. And I'm like, yeah, it's scattered in there a little bit, but not nearly as much as I expected.
But it is still
a refreshing change of pace.
It does. I mean, but still, I mean, you have to just look at it this way. I mean, if you're buying, like, whatever Fire Emblem game for $40, and then you're getting two other ones for $20 a piece, you're essentially getting three full-fledged Fire Emblem games. I mean, this is not like a Pokemon Red and Blue situation where it's just the same map, which is tiny differences. These mm-hmm. are different story paths. And I will say, though, it's just once you get further into the later tail end of Conquest's maps, it is a grind, and it makes me kind of just dread thinking, well, just, I don't know, twitch my eye thinking, like, wow, if I would have done this in classic mode,
your whole army would have been dead, and it would have been permanent game over, and you'd have to start over.
No, I would have wore out both my left, right, and start buttons, because that's the classic, that's the way to basically a hard restart for a Fire Emblem game.
So that you can immediately reset the map?
It's to restart to the start,
the main menu of the game, that way you can get back in, yeah.
Because I did not know that when I played Awakening, every time when I lost it, you know, my good archer or my good
Pegasus Rider.
Yeah.
Those guys always die.
Because, yeah, when it does that, it's like, oh, I just turn off 3DS. And then until I heard on Nintendo voice chat, Paris Snyder just said, oh, the classic Fire Emblem, you know, LR start. I'm like, why did I not know about that?
I'll tell you a secret. I didn't know about it until just now either. So
it actually works for the majority of video games as well. It's kind of a hard reset for a lot of games. Even resetting data sometimes is done that way. If you turn a game on, if you ever buy a used game, especially for like a DS or a Game Boy Advance, and you don't want to play somebody else's save data because you obviously want to start fresh with your own and there's no way to delete the save data that's already there, if you turn the game on and then immediately hold LR and start and select, it will usually then ask you if you want to permanently delete the data that's on the game card.
But that's quite a lot on there. But I don't want to talk too much about Fire Emblem, but I mean, just to finish up here, I mean, I completed last week, and I'm trying to sit around some time to play Revelations, which of course is a more of a middle ground, like it was like moderate to difficult kind of like a difficulty range for, you know, three in there, whereas, like, a Conquest of the Higher, the harder one. Birthright's a very good place for newcomers to the series. And I was really glad going through this, at least. Like, there's at least different cinematics in this one. And every time I look at these cinematics, and as much as I love the ones in Awakening, it makes me want an animated series of Fire Emblem so bad.
Yeah, and I think the ones in the animated cutscenes in Fates are better. I hope I'm not blaspheming to anybody, but I think they're better than Awakening. Did you, okay, when you got to that scene kind of mid-game that has like a Birthright counterpart where Azura sings and dances or whatever, when you got to the version of that in Conquest, did your jaw just drop because you were like, whoa, wasn't expecting that?
As in, like, how different it is? Yeah.
Yes.
Because you've seen the trailer, she's wearing something different.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I mean, it's
the style of music. I mean, it just completely changes.
Yeah, because All Face Alone, that song, by the way, that's I actually chatted for a little bit with the voice actress who voices Azura on Twitter, and, you know, just said, like, this is a great song, please Nintendo put this out. And like the ending song to that Azura sings, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
But there's a particular scene, I think, in the last major cutscene of Conquest that I just laughed because it was a lack of subtlety, and you'll understand. It's very quickly. It involves Camilla
yikes.
So just I just put my 3DS on the ground, like, really? Just no subtlety of that one, but I digress. But no, I'm looking forward to actually playing more of a Revelation and Conquest. It's just I enjoyed it as much going through, but obviously I wasn't pulling my hair out if I was just restarting all the time. But
right. But
for my Matt, if you're getting into the series, the reason I would kind of still say ease into casual mode, but don't go all guns a-blazing, because what classic mode essentially teaches you to do, especially trying to save, you know, your units, it just teaches you to micromanage. Micromanage in terms of just like, hey, is this character, like, worth saving, or is this one worth to actually, you know, draw enemies out there? And, of course, when you go through the game, you know, don't be afraid to lose, you know, people. Like, there are some times...
Yeah, that was definitely something that I learned in SteamWorld Heist. One of my biggest lessons was, it's okay to go back. Like, you don't have to keep marching forward. It's okay to take a step back and, like, go for cover.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the biggest things that I learned about, like, RTSs. It's been years since when I played SteamWorld Heist that I had played like any sort of, like, tactics type game. The one that I played way before that was called Rebel Star for the Game Boy Advance. And I don't have a lot of experience in the genre, but I definitely kind of got the idea that, like, you're gonna lose people. You're gonna need to, like, go for cover. Like, this is not a first person shooting game. It's not go in there and hit that A button until you run out of ammo. It is take time and figure out what you're gonna do.
Oh yeah, like, and when I first played Birthright, and I got to maybe my second to last turn before I finished it, and suddenly one of my riders got killed. And it was at that point I'm like, do I restart and try to save this person? And it felt like a scene out of Harold and Kumar at the beginning when they're walking out. They're like, do you want to get your cell phone? Or like, we've gone too far.
Yeah, I feel that way too. That's why I lost. I won't lie. When I played Birthright for the first time, I lost permanently and decided to move on. I lost Silas and Kagero. I think that's it, though. So maybe I got lucky. But yeah, I would actually say when I first got into Fire Emblem Awakening, which was my first game in the series, I decided to go with classic mode just because it's part of the Fire Emblem experience. If you get into Fire Emblem and think, like, I'm just going to do Phoenix mode so that I can kind of, you know, like, learn things at a slow pace, I feel like you're kind of missing out on the point of the series almost. So at least try it out. Try it out on normal. Try out Birthright, which is obviously the easier one, on just normal difficulty with classic mode turned on. And you live and learn with the Fire Emblem series. You live, you see characters die, and you learn.
Yep.
From mistakes, and that's part of the experience.
I think
exactly.
That with that said, we can definitely move on to the next game in this brief. I don't know if anyone remembered me saying that or not. Brief what we've been playing segment.
At this point, I just want to have, like, a Fire Emblem.
I can tell. Holly was
podcast, like a whole episode, but yeah, I guess we can move on.
Holly got very excited that there was somebody else that was like talking about Fire Emblem and like knew what they were talking about.
Yes.
I could hear it in your voice. You were literally like, oh, well, you know, we can just keep talking about this.
Yes. But that's okay. I'm ready to talk about Runbo.
Yes, I'd love to hear what you have to say about Runbo, Holly. Of course, this was a game that you picked up because of the Humble Bundle, Friends of Nintendo, that it's over and done with now. But man, were there so many good games, and Runbo was, of course, one of them. What do you think of Runbo so far?
I haven't had too much time with it, but I did play the multiplayer. I haven't really tried. I mean, I tried when the demo first came out. I did try the single player mode. Instantly was turned off by it. But then I tried the multiplayer mode. I thought, like, well, yeah, I got this game, you know, pretty much for free, I almost feel like, because I paid so little. And I had some friends over anyway. And so I was like, guys, stop arguing about what we should play. Let's just try something new that even I haven't even really tried. So we decided to dive into Runbo just for funsies. And it ended up being so much fun. It's such chaos. But in a good way. And at first you may think, like, there's so much to manage and so much to try to wrap your brain around. And that's why I didn't like it the first time I tried it, is because as those colors sweep across the screen and, you know, platforms will disappear or reappear, you know, whatever the case is, it just seemed like too much. And so I played the demo for, you know, solo for probably 15 minutes before I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this game very much. But man, that multiplayer, after like, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes of playing, I finally felt like I really wrapped my head around that concept, and I was just like creaming everybody. But at the same time, it's not necessarily a game where you suck if you've never played it or whatever, or it takes a long time to learn, really, because we were actually kind of pretty even. You know, sometimes it would get so chaotic that somebody would win and we're just like, wait, what the heck just happened? Like, my sister would be like, oh, look, I won. And for some reason, so much chaos, but so much fun. We only managed to get 5 people playing at the same time, which is not quite 9, you know.
Now, did you only play the race mode, or did you also try like the King of the Hill or the Color Master mode or either one of those?
We tried every single multiplayer mode available. We just kind of cycled through them, actually, like 5 matches each or whatever.
And so which one did we you enjoy everything. The most?
I hated Color Master.
It's way too unfair, right?
Well, I don't... unfair as in the person with the gamepad has the bigger advantage?
Oh, huge advantage. And I felt like... I didn't put a ton of time into the Color Master mode because I felt like it wasn't fun making my daughter lose, like, so badly. I'll be honest. Like, I felt like a really bad dad. And she's like...
spam the bombs and the lightning. And
I know.
You don't even have to use the colors, which I just feel like makes it feel really unbalanced.
Yes, I that's exactly what I felt. I don't even know if that would be fun with... maybe if you had the full 8 people over there and then one on the Color Master, maybe then it would be difficult for the Color Master, you know, the person with the gamepad, to really like try and stop everybody. But it still just felt like it was way too much of an advantage for the person with the gamepad.
Yeah, so I'd agree with that. Color Master, not the best mode.
I did not play King of the Hill. I never
King,
that's
King
just
Hill
basically
kind of
Smash Brothers
one.
Right,
well, sort of not. Everyone has their own counter, so the person who wins is the one who has stood on the correct spot for, like, you know, a total of 7 really slow or seemingly slow seconds.
But it's,
I didn't mind that one.
Basically fighting, though, right? Like, that's the main gist
of
that. You're supposed to fight each other.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that much like Smash Brothers, especially since in Smash Brothers you can, for the most part, mash buttons and do okay. Whereas you try to mash that fight button in Runbo and you're going to end up off a cliff. But the race mode and King of the Hill and what else was there? Oh yeah, oh my gosh, like this fighting kind of mode where you are trying to fight and take people out, like knock them into the lava or just, you know, punch them until they run out of health or whatever, which I'm not even sure if there's a health bar, but I think that mode probably was my favorite.
That's what
I had fun with that one.
That's what I thought King of the Hill was, that mode right there.
Oh, okay. Yep, they're two different ones, kind of the same concept, but I prefer the one that is not King of the Hill, whatever that one is called. Arena?
Right. Oh, yeah, I think there was one called Arena, actually, now that you say that.
Yeah, that might be my favorite. Followed by the simple, just run to the end of the level.
Yes, the race mode is definitely fun, but that was all because of that awesome Humble Bundle, obviously. You were able to pick that up, and I actually got the Humble Bundle as well, and it introduced me to a game that I've never had a huge amount of excitement for, but I knew existed, so I definitely wanted to check it out. It's called Freedom Planet. Now, are either one of you familiar with what Freedom Planet is?
My co-host Colin and Lewis have discussed this about like previous times, and Rumbo is actually one I've been wanting to try out a lot, but I ended up settling on Shantae and Affordable Space Adventures. So
Affordable Space Adventures I absolutely adore as of right now, and also Shantae's been really fun. I've never played a Shantae game before, but it's definitely just a Metroid game or a Castlevania, however you want to classify it. Seems totally fun. But Freedom Planet, in case either or anybody's not aware, is supposed to basically be a spiritual successor to Sonic games. This is supposed to feel like a Sega Genesis stylized Sonic game, and for better or for worse, this is Sonic. Like, literally Sonic. Everything about it feels like Sonic. There's two characters. Character one is called Lilac, I think, and the other character's named Carol. They're both like these cat female type character creatures. They have a special power. Carol does these like flurry of kicks, and then Lilac, when you hit the special button, she turns into a ball, and then she super speeds in a direction that you choose, which sounds like Sonic. And it has one of the biggest problems that Sonic games have, in my opinion, too. It's that you're going so fast and you don't have the momentum to stop before you run into an enemy. And
yeah, I've always struggled with Sonic games for that reason as well. That and the fact that, like, I don't know, are you supposed to like slow down to go back for collectibles that you missed? Sonic and I just don't get along very well.
I feel the same thing about this one. So I also started playing Sonic 3 because I have it on my Wii, just popped in the Wii mode to play it. And I was like, this is a good game. Like, this feels good. Like, Sonic 3 is definitely the best of all the Sonic games. It really grabbed the formula and it said, this is what works and this is not what works, and they were able to make it work in Sonic 3, in my opinion, very well, where this game feels like Sonic 2 or Sonic 1 even. It feels very kind of jagged on the edges when it comes to the gameplay. The controls are super floaty. The running doesn't ever feel like you're going to get to go fast enough unless you do the special move, but there's times when you can't get to the special move when you would need to. When you're getting chased by this rock, for instance, it just felt very jarring because it's like, if I keep running, shouldn't I get progressively faster? I don't know. It feels very jagged, and if you are a fan of Sonic games, like, you will love this game. Like, this is Sonic with a different skin. So I'm done with it. I played through the first three levels with both characters so I could see what their differences were and if I wanted to continue. The game looks old, not in a good way. It looks like 16-bit graphics, which were never as good as Super Nintendo graphics. So I don't really need to play this game anymore. So I'm done. It feels like Sonic. It is Sonic, and I don't care to play any Sonic right now in my life.
So it's basically. So what you're saying is You're stripping it down of what Sonic essentially is. It's just a marketing tool.
Yeah, and this is it didn't market to me. It didn't convince me. I don't know if I'm going to get some flack or hate for saying that Sonic is not as good as Mario. I think everyone is in agreement to that. But like I said, Sonic 3 is a great game. I will play Sonic 3 all the time, anytime, whatever the case may be. I'm going to go back and play that over Freedom Planet, for instance. But Freedom Planet, no bueno. I'm done with it. I'm going to move on with my life. Just like we're going to move on with this podcast. And
good
idea. We're going to talk about our next part of business, which is a little bit of Nintendo news. We're going to talk about the Pokemon Sun and Moon trailer, which I'm sure we all saw. And it's crazy because even I watched it. Because, Holly,
that is crazy.
I'm kind of excited for Pokemon Moon.
Pokemon Sun and Moon. Oh, you're getting Moon?
I think, yeah, Moon, because it's
even
a little darker.
Even after seeing those legendaries?
The legendaries I don't care about because who knows how long I'll play for and or accomplish any of that stuff. But I am a little disappointed because for the first time in a Pokemon game, because I've kept up with the series kind of a little bit, there's no starter that looks appealing to me.
Oh,
are you joking? You weren't
I don't like
enamored
cats.
By Rowlet?
You weren't enamored by the internet's obsession by the
I hate cats.
Well, not Litten, Rowlett. Everyone exploded over Rowlett, I thought.
I just both assumed
more for Rowlett, and then Litten was a close second, and then of course the sea lion looking thing, which name's escaping me right now.
Oh, Popplio.
Popplio was just in the back.
Here's the thing.
Killing. Oh, I'm definitely choosing that one then.
I like it when my Pokemon look cute. I have nothing against that, but I also like them to look dangerous a little bit, and none of these Pokemon look dangerous by any little bit. Rowlett, way too adorable. That is like the new Jigglypuff, where if it's added in Smash Brothers, it's going to literally be the most scary opponent that you could possibly fight. But as of right now, it just looks like it looks like a plushie that I want to squeeze, not necessarily fight with.
Well, wait until the fully evolved forms are revealed.
Even then,
that's the only thing you should care about. That's all my brother cares about for sure.
I care about the starter and what the starters look like. The otter looking one for the Poplu or whatever his name is.
Popplio.
Once again, too cute.
Like a sea lion.
He looks like a Mickey's dog. Not Mickey's dog, not Pluto, but there was an episode where Mickey Mouse and Pluto went to the zoo and they met an otter, and the otter followed him back home. This is exactly what that otter looks like.
That's interesting. I think the one certain detail of Rowlett that I really love so much, because it just makes me feel like this thing is super flippin' adorable, is that he essentially has a bow tie. It has a bow tie, and this led to probably the one tweet related to the reveal that I just lost it, and I totally would relate to because I have experience with this. It says, it just shows a picture of Rowlett just standing still, and the official art has a little bow tie, leaf bow tie, and the tweet says, excited to have a starting Pokemon that looks like me slowly realizing that I bombed a job interview.
That's great.
Oh, man. Everyone's picking Rowlett, apparently.
I will probably pick Litten because I prefer fire Pokemon, but I hate cats.
Oh, yikes.
I hate
Litten
cats.
You were saying that, you know, none of them look, you know, dangerous or anything. I'd say Litten does, but I guess that explains why you don't like that Pokemon. Poor Litten.
I loved the fire Pokemon from Gen 2. I can't think of his name.
Cyndaquil.
I love Cyndaquil.
Who's that Pokemon section right there?
I was going to do it, but I would give it away so quickly if I had to. But I love Cyndaquil. I think he's a cool Pokemon. I liked his evolved forms. I liked, you know, using him throughout the journey in Pokemon Silver. So Litten just looks like a sad, I don't know, it looks like a cat. And it looks like the internet's, you know, outrageous love of cats rolled into this. I hate cats.
But that kitty's on fire.
But it won't die.
This kitty's on fire.
but it won't die. So that's a bad sign. Like kitty's on fire.
It won't die.
Yeah, you said the kitty's on fire. It won't die, so it doesn't matter.
Its fully evolved form is going to look amazing, I bet you.
It's going to look like
a big
cat.
I'm a new fan of cats.
I will never be a fan of cats because they don't love me unless I love them.
Well, speaking of who's that Pokemon, I quickly have to say that I just found a tweet, actually. I need to check Nintendo Fever's Twitter more. But we did have somebody guess our last week's Who's That Pokemon. Ivan guessed again, and again was correct. So congrats to Ivan. Thanks so much for participating in that. And sorry that we don't have another one for you to guess this week, but I just had to put that in there.
Don't forget that if you do want to talk about Pokemon news or anything like that with us, you can use the hashtag NFPokemon, and we promise that we'll check it more than once a week.
Yes, we will. It's our new resolution.
Yes.
But anyway, moving on. So actually, does anybody have any thoughts on anything else in the trailer? Besides the starters, I think we probably can move on.
I just want to say that I thought it looked slightly chunky, sadly.
What?
You know, in the way that the characters moved in the world, it looked a little less smooth in comparison to what I thought it was going to look like. I was really hoping that it was going to turn out looking a little bit more, I don't know, advanced. Or I guess we did obviously have...
It's a 3DS game. You gotta give it credit for what it is, which I think it actually looks pretty impressive.
I thought it looked a lot like Black and White with a little bit prettier paint.
You're talking about X and Y, right?
Because
Black and White
on the DS.
They were in 2D.
But didn't they have 3D sections?
Well, kinda. I think you're probably thinking of X and Y.
Well,
Y was basically the transition to a new kind of like a,
to an actual 3D world.
It just looked kind of chunky, clunky, I guess is the better word to me. It didn't look smooth, and I know that it's just a trailer and things could change over time. But that didn't look like the open world Pokemon game that I envisioned in my head, I guess.
Well, we didn't really see as much outside. We just saw a little
inside
bit
of town, yeah.
Inside of town, but I think there was one little bit of footage of your trainer, walking up a hill.
Yes.
And even with the introduction of this new engine that we saw with X and Y, it still felt grid based. You know, like
yes.
You would move your directional pad.
Ah, that's what you meant.
But thing is, when I saw with this one, I could have sworn like maybe they are finally doing away with a grid based.
Yes.
Form.
That's exactly what I thought, too. So, high five to Harrison, several hundred miles away.
Several states, yeah.
It looks great.
Oh, no, that's the thing I got from it out there, because obviously, you have to look at this as far as the 3DS's lineup coming up this fall, and knowing what we've seen with certain Nintendo titles, like NX not coming out until March, Zelda not coming until next year, it's just the only thing that's 3DS is thankful to have, you know, this fall is Pokemon. That itself is going to sell units. And, you know, there's, of course, people who are out there like, why not push this out to a next console? It's the same reason why Black and White 2 released on the DS early in the 3DS's life cycle is because that other system had a larger install base.
Oh, yeah. And mm-hmm. the one previous to the DS also released first for the Game Boy Advance before there was a new one made for the DS. Like,
true.
Pokemon will go where the larger install base is at, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Pokemon Company loves to actually, that's the one thing they love to do with it.
They love to make money. Yes, they do.
Oh, yes, they do. And I have to say, though, these last couple of years, though, of Pokemon, I feel like there's a bit of a larger resurgence. Not in terms of the phenomenon that we saw in the late 90s and early 2000s, but it's the fact that we're seeing a new generation of kids getting into Pokemon. I mean, not necessarily the craze that we did, but they're interested.
Oh, yeah.
I think Nintendo's doing a good job of showcasing that this game is a game that you can only experience and play on your 3DS, or I'm gonna guess that this game is gonna be pushed heavily with the 2DS, the same way that X and Y was too, to try and push those 2DS sales.
I think this is just me speculating though, but I have a feeling this thing's going to run a lot better on new 3DS.
I would agree with that. Yes.
We'll see. I feel like they definitely want to make sure that they have that 2DS audience, because the idea of the 2DS was to sell for kids that were younger than the suggested 3D age, which is actually like 8 or 7 or something like that. So they want to make sure that they market this to parents and say, this game is for your 2DS, for your younger children as well as your older children who can get it on something like a 3DS. That like you're saying, it's all speculation, obviously, but I would be less surprised to see a special edition 2DS more than I would be surprised to see a special edition new 3DS. Let's put it that way.
Fair point.
But it's coming out November 18th, so mark your calendars, get yourself ready. It's a little bit after my birthday, so Holly, I like late birthday presents. And
hey, it's a little before my birthday.
Why don't we just get it for each other, and it'll be a late birthday present for me and an early birthday present for you.
I guess we could do that.
Curious question to everybody. Which version is everybody getting first?
Moon.
Sun, just because my brother picked Moon. But now that I've seen the Legendaries, I'm like, yeah, Sun all the way.
To quote probably one of my favorite children's books, Good Night, Moon.
Good Night, Moon.
Aw, poor Sun. That's another reason I want Sun, is because it doesn't seem to have as much love. But I think we can move on to our next little piece of news.
Yes, and this is pretty interesting, I feel. Disney Infinity, of course, it was a small phenomenon for maybe a tiny little while. The first one seemed like it got a lot of attention really quickly, and the second one seemed exciting and new because of the Marvel. And then the third one also seemed like a lot of people were excited for it and enjoyed it because of the Star Wars theme. And even though there was no direct plans to release a 4.0, it did seem like that would maybe happen at this year's E3. But as we found out earlier this week, Disney Infinity completely, totally canceled. We will never see a new Disney Infinity game, and it doesn't sound like we'll see any new Disney Toys to Life figures as well.
I think they have plans to release content for Alice Through the Looking Glass and
previously conceived content. I think they said that there's going to be nothing created new as of basically the starting point. Disney Infinity, for anyone that doesn't know, is another Toys to Life game where you interact with a world. There's two ways to do it. One is a toy box where anything and everything can happen, and you can actually build stages and levels and gameplay mechanics within it. And then there's also adventures that you use per character. Certain ones come with their own like mission, basically, and you can enter into their world, such as like in the first one, The Incredibles. If you had Mr. Incredible and his daughter, that was the Incredible Girl, you could play with them inside the same world, and you could go on an adventure with each other. Where if you play in the toy box, you can use like Mr. Incredible and Jack Sparrow in a set of rules inside that as well. I played the first one with my daughter and quite liked it. I wanted to get the second one because it looked like it was a much better overhaul of the game itself. And then when the third one came out, I wanted to get that as well. So I'm excited for them to cancel it. And I know that sounds kind of morbid, but it just means clearance. So I'm going to get myself a clearance Disney Infinity 3.0. So that'll be cool.
This feels very weird knowing, I mean, this news to me came a little bit shocking just out of nowhere because I felt, especially this brand.
Definitely out of nowhere.
The Toys to Life market with Skylanders and Infinity and, of course, Amiibo, I thought itself was, doing well. I mean, not doing as far as terms of gamebusters, but the more I read into it was that, when Disney, and this is not only Disney getting out of Infinity, they're getting out of the video game business as a publisher now.
Yes.
Right.
So which is something that has been kind of been hinted at for a while. They were done with like the Epic Mickey games after the poor sales of the second one. They had pulled the plug on a racing game that they had kind of had into a good relationship for a long time. So I feel like there's been kind of a notion that this might be happening. And the fact that it did happen is, it came out of nowhere. It literally came out of left field. So it was kind of surprising in that respect, but they're still cool with licensing out their material for game development, but they're not going to do anything else in-house anymore.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, they've at least, as a publisher, have done some pretty decent good things out there. I mean, well, not recently, but over throughout history. It's just it's the changing bits of times right now where in a game industry, you're the only type of publishers or publishers that really thrive are the really high end ones or the indies. The ones in the middle are the ones that just die out.
But there is no middle ground.
Yes, exactly. That's the same thing can be applied to game journalism. It's the high ones or the smaller ones with like a bit of a flack that survive or the Patreon, but the middle ones out. But Disney is actually paying they're taking a $147 million charge to cancel the whole line. So they either have a buttload of like inventory, which leads me to another thing to ask. Like, it makes me feel like they flooded the Toys to Life market, and they did basically the opposite of what Nintendo did at first, and they succeeded with it. And that's in terms of Nintendo did not really see as much many Amiibos to meet demand, whereas it seems like every set that came with Infinity, Disney just here's 20 figures, here you go, have fun.
Well, and Disney, when Nintendo first released the Amiibo, they actually Disney gave Nintendo flack, the developers, not Disney themselves, obviously, gave Nintendo flack for the way that they were releasing their Amiibo, saying that you should have enough to put on store shelves and make sure the consumer doesn't need to go out and look for it. And while I agreed with what he was saying overall, I understood what Nintendo was also doing because there is a demand when you have there is a supply when you need a demand, but there isn't a supply when there is no demand. I mean, if everybody has one, nobody wants one. If nobody has one, everybody wants one. Sadly, I feel like Disney Infinity did a good job by incorporating the game with their Toys to Life, where Nintendo has never done that. Sadly, I think this shows to a small extent two things. One, if it's not making $1 billion, it's not worth Disney's time. Which is the weird thing about game development nowadays, like you were saying, where there's no middle ground. It comes to the money thing where smaller, medium-sized studios were just happy to make a game and make money, which is what the indies are now, obviously, where AAA or big-time developers, if it's not making X amount of money, they just don't want to do it anymore because it doesn't produce what it is they need it to produce. And I think that's one thing that Disney Infinity, or with this cancellation, it showed that it wasn't making enough money, even if it was making good money. And then it also shows, I think, in a positive light for Amiibo, either Nintendo's okay with whatever it's doing, you know, it may not be doing gangbusters, but it's doing enough, or there might be a little bit more nostalgia for Nintendo Amiibo than there is for something like Disney Infinity, which I think is kind of interesting.
Well, when you look at it right now, if you're putting two different figures, okay, for, say, people our age, what are they going to choose? Basically, hey, here's this Legend of Zelda, you know, Toys to Life figure, or here's Darth Vader, or another bad example. Or
that was actually a good example, I feel, because our generation, our time, like, we both grew up with the movies, just like we grew up with the games, and I think this is kind of saying that the people are going to pick the Link figure, which is,
yeah,
I think, really interesting, because Darth Vader holds a lot of cachet with both a little bit younger than us and a little bit older than us, but I feel like there may be more of us that are willing to go with Link, because I had the opportunity to buy Disney Infinity 2. I never did. And that one actually appealed to me more because it had, like, the Marvel superheroes, but it was never enough for me to want to say, like, oh, I guess I'll drop the money to go get this, because me, as a almost 30-year-old man who has supporting a family and doesn't have a huge amount of time to game, and I want to make sure that I have time to play games with my family as well, I want to keep with the momentum that I'm moving forward with in the games that I already have purchased. So I didn't want to go out the next year and just keep buying Infinity over and over again. But if I could just buy Link, who would work with multiple games over a large amount of time, it's a much more enticing offer in a lot of ways.
Well, no, you're right. It's just when you're looking at, say, the comparison of buying a Link figure over a Darth Vader figure, is when you look at Star Wars, or even if I put a Marvel character or even a Disney character there, is that there's already other merchandise for that character everywhere else.
Yeah, I agree with
because
that.
Because when you look at Amiibo,
that's it.
Nintendo's already admitted that, yeah, people are just buying these essentially to collect. And I really do hope Nintendo finds a way to actually do something more than just, oh, it's just locked DLC. I mean, I'm not collecting these things left and right like I did early on. I'm only looking for ones that, you know, appeal to me in design. But when you look at far as a Link figure, it just shows, yeah, there's a market out there for Nintendo merch. People want to buy these figures of Nintendo characters that they know, because aside from Figma figures that are going to cost upwards of like $100 or $200, oh yeah, I would definitely buy one that's like $13 of a little figurine of Link, because, like I said, we don't see many options for that.
Yep, and I think that's it.
I'm still waiting for Zero Suit Link over here. when we had that? Lewis on.
Yeah, Lewis.
Yep, you'll have to ask if you forgot about that, because I think you mentioned you actually heard that episode, but yeah, ask Lewis about it.
Yeah.
I'll try to. No. Okay. Here's the thing, when I'm recording our podcast, like, I have no say in naming the episode, and since this last episode week, I was not on due to scheduling conflicts at my part-time job, and episode for ours came out, and I looked online, oh, what do we name the episode? And the name of the episode is, I Refuse to Squeeze My Cat.
Classic.
I don't know what the context of that is, but anyway, the one thing I wanted to end though was, like, Disney as a publisher, like, getting on that whole, like, that can of worms right now in terms of, like, just video game business just collapsing on itself, it seems like, is that it makes it, there goes some think pieces out there of a few years back of when Nintendo was, like, really struggling, like, first out with the Wii U at the gate, and how when Disney was, like, basically buying almost seems like everything. It was, like, right after when Disney bought Lucasfilm. And I forgot what site posted this about. It was detailing the possibility of, you know, hey, this would be a good way for Disney to strengthen themselves in the video game business, but also to help out Nintendo, was Disney buying Nintendo. And they ran down the numbers, and judging from that, it would possibly be Disney's largest acquisition in their history. at value to like 15 billion because they bought Marvel around 7 billion, I believe, and Lucasfilm around 4 billion. So a video game giant that's well known, yeah, that itself would be commanding a lot of high dollars.
You know, I think sometimes people forget, and just to kind of put what you're saying in context, adding to it, is the fact that a lot of people know who Luke Skywalker is. A lot of people know who Darth Vader is. I would wager a bet that everybody knows who Mario is. Mm-hmm. You will know who Mario is before you will know who Luke Skywalker is. I mean, you'll grow up and you'll eventually learn about all these characters in the Marvel universe. But the very first character that a lot of people will be introduced to, especially if they're kind of in geek culture, pop culture, stuff like that, is Mario. You know, and who knows if that will be the same story in 5 to 10 years because of the way that the PlayStation 2 was obviously a giant in its time frame as well. But even then, we still have Mario 64 to look back on. We still have Mario Galaxy now. You know, luckily every generation has kept up with itself in re-giving notion to what Nintendo is. And Star Wars kind of did that. I mean, they have a kids show, they have books, they have novels, they have movies, blah, blah, blah. But there's nothing that gives them the ability to play as that, I guess. I don't know.
Well, when you look at it, as far as Mario's character, from the mid-80s up to even, I would say, to probably the early 2000s, Mario was more recognizable around children than Mickey Mouse.
Than Mickey Mouse. Yep.
Yeah, more recognizable.
So it holds a lot of cachet, but we should definitely move on to our hearts always as well go out to all the people that lost their jobs in this, because besides the fact that I'm going to get a great deal on something for clearance, as I'm joking around about, just want to make sure everyone fully understands that it is terrible that a lot of people had to lose their jobs for this type of thing to happen. And, you know, obviously, hopefully these are very talented developers, people with traits and skills, and they're able to go and pursue other wonderful things as well. I want to make sure no one thinks that we're throwing scuff at anything like this, because we understand that people's jobs are to make video games, and when that video game gets turned off, that means their job gets turned off as well. So we hope that them all the best. But we're going to move on to our feature now and try to go not necessarily as quickly as possible. We want to do just a small retrospective of E3 2015. I wished I would have rewatched the digital event. Did you, Holly, watch the digital event again in preparation?
Well, did you look at my notes?
I did, and they're super detailed.
Yes, I did watch it last night and took notes. But we should just go over, you know, whatever we want to. At this point, I think the best things to go over would be, you know, game reveals or trailers or whatever for games that are now out and are fairly recent, like Star Fox, for example, since there's a lot of talk on Star Fox and how, you know, despite the fact that Star Fox was delayed, everyone still hates the control scheme.
Yeah, most people.
Yeah. Well, I still plan on picking it up on there. I feel like it's I still can't get over that guy I forgot who it was from Polygon who just refused to review it because of the controls. Somebody had tweeted out, well, you do realize there's an invincibility mode if you want to turn that on, and it was kind of a mic drop moment. I'm like, oh dear.
Yeah, but anyway, back in E3 2015, that E3 of course started with the puppet show that we all still love, I'm assuming, despite the fact that it's all associated with Star Fox Zero, and everybody seems to hate that now. You still gotta love that little puppet show. And then we see the Star Fox trailer.
Why is everybody just hating on Star... I mean, I can understand hating the control scheme on there, but just hating Star Fox as an image because of, oh, I just hate... It's Nintendo characters as Muppets, and how could you go wrong?
Yeah. Definitely. So yeah, I've seen some things where people are all like, well, death of the Star Fox series. I'm like, so Nintendo experimented a little bit. You think that Star Fox is dead? Well, maybe it is, but we shall see in the future.
I wouldn't say dead. I think it's more of a, well, I don't want to get on there. But Star Fox is a series, I feel like, is not one of those things where it thrived on nostalgia for people who were casual people of the game, where it's like, oh, a new Star Fox game, and those people who demanded a new Star Fox game got it in the form of Zero, even if it was limitations, basically, going into the controls or how it was designed. It's just, when you look in terms of Star Fox, it's a recognizable name for Nintendo fans, but in terms of selling gangbusters and in terms of sales...
It was never going to do that.
No, it's not there. And, well, I think it sold in the top 10 of the NPD that just came out.
Yeah, that's impressive enough.
Yeah. So, but
well, I kind of
I don't think it's dead. I think it's a series that it's going to be. It would be suited best for episodic format, like in terms of like, hey, here's one episode, here's this, not a whole full-fledged game. But
yeah, that's probably right, because one of the biggest complaints about it is just the length of it, the short length. But I do kind of wish you guys went back and at least watched that trailer for Star Fox, because I, like I say, rewatched the Nintendo Digital event, saw that Star Fox trailer, and realized, despite the fact that when we saw that trailer, we all thought like, oh, it looks kind of generic and, you know, something is missing. Well, I don't think much was changed based on my experience with the game now. Weirdly. And remember when later trailers came out and were just like, oh yeah, it's starting to look okay. Well, it hasn't changed that much, to be honest. Even I thought that. Like, at first I was like, yeah, they're a little on the generic side. And then, you know, future trailers came out and I thought, like, yeah, it's getting better. Well, I don't know if the change was there.
I think that kind of just shows that we just became okay with it looking the way that it turned out looking. Like,
I guess that's probably true.
We just all were just like,
warmed up
I guess it's good enough. I mean, that was happened to us.
Well, what do you expect for, especially for a game with a vehicle with such, you know, an odd design? I mean, as far as pointed angles, whatever. I mean, it's not...
The walker.
I mean, well, they're not terrible. This is, I'm not saying these are bad designs. It's just when you look at enemy designs in Star Fox and even the ships, they're not as detailed when you look through each and every game, even if you put these with an Unreal Engine or any type of like graphical capabilities onto it. It's just, it's a series that's not going to be known for like, oh, it will.
That was gorgeous.
It will wow you. It's just the, although looking at trailers and seeing through demos, it's or not demos, but through some playthroughs, it does see that platinum touch to it, which is, that's the only thing that keeps me wanting to play it.
Yeah. Well, Music sounds very 101, wonderful 101-esque to me. So yeah, I love that kind of influence from Platinum.
And that's a game that whose controls upset me at first, and then once I played more of it, I really enjoyed it. So, but
yeah, same here. It's a weirdly likable game somehow. But I actually want to go back to Harrison's comment and kind of our overall discussion about whether Star Fox is dead. Here's something kind of funny, a weird connection that I made watching the Nintendo Digital event again. Everyone says the F-Zero is pretty much dead or stagnant. At the very least, the F-Zero series is stagnant. Well, during the digital event last year at Nintendo's E3, Reggie Fils-Aimé talked about how the theme for the, you know, show and stuff like that was transformation. And he talks at length about how, like, you know, we care about all of our franchises and we're always, you know, changing things and making, you know, innovations and things like that. We never want to see our franchises stand still or go stagnant. Well, Reggie, give us new F-Zero. I don't know. Nintendo still has all these IPs that really do feel like they have gone stagnant. So I think that's kind of funny that they would specifically mention at E3, like, we really, you know, we really just want to move forward with all our franchises and keep them constantly moving.
Yeah,
I don't think Nintendo has done very good at that.
Yeah, but that's also a lot of PR talk, sadly. They're going to say things like that all the time. They also said this terrible thing, I think it was 2 years ago, where they're like, while everyone else is showing off games that you're not going to be playing for a couple of years, we over here at Nintendo are showing you games that you're going to be able to play right away. And they showed things off like Star Fox and Mario Maker. And
Star Fox was kind of just alluded to a little bit.
Well, no, but that's the thing is...
In that particular E3.
They were talking about the other people... because, like, Uncharted was nothing more than, like, a logo. And there was some... Gears was just a small gameplay demo on the Xbox. Like, they were trying to say that we have all these things that are coming out, but they do the same thing. They just like to make themselves sound like they're doing a better job of doing something, which is what PR is, and that's fine. I want to actually talk about something that they did during the E3 where they showed off... The cool things that they did with, they did this a little bit the year before, I believe. They did the developer talks, some more of those. Like, they did it when they did the Triforce Heroes, and they did it with Super Mario Maker, and they did it with
Yoshi's Woolly World.
And I just think that was such a cool thing that they did that continuously. And I think that it's really fun that we're getting to see these eyeballs into Nintendo's workshops, because I think even me, as attuned as I am to Nintendo, like, and I'm not saying I do this, but it is kind of easy to be like, well, who makes the video games? Miyamoto, right? And there's obviously a lot lot of different hands that make these things happen, and it's just cool what they do by showing off the different parts of the teams that are involved with making everything that they do make. So I just thought that was, looking back at E3, it's so sad this year that it's going to be so blank. We're not having a digital event. We're having a Treehouse Live kickoff event, and then they're just going to stream Zelda for 3 days. It seems very naive, and in a way, it honestly feels like an axe to our legs as fans, because we look for information and news and something to be excited about, and Zelda's awesome. 3 days of Zelda's kind of tiring, and we're not going to get any other Wii U announcement or 3DS announcement from any other publisher, so we're going to see nothing in E3. E3 this year for Nintendo fans, kind of a terrible thing in comparison to every other year, and I thought last year was stark of information.
If you want a really bad year, you want to go to maybe 2003, and their main tentpole item was Pac-Man Versus, I believe, where they had Will Wright, Shigeru Miyamoto, and I'm drawing a blank on the two other things. It might have been Peter Molyneux just demoing Pac-Man Versus on the GameCube with Game Boy Advances, the link cable connected to the GameCube. And
was the extent of the show?
That was one of the extent of the show, and it gave birth to probably one of my favorite memes. It's a meme from a long while back. It's called The Reaction Guys, and it shows Mark Bozon, Pierre Schneider, Matt Casamassina, the Nintendo guys from IGN, and they're just standing there, just stone cold face, standing, like just staring. And then they ended up doing another one where it shows them like the antithesis of that reaction, going excited, and it just became like a whole different type of meme on there. But that was an E3 I despised, or
that they announced Animal Crossing for the Wii was a very bad E3 as well. It was 2009,
Was that the one with DJ Raffy drums?
Yes,
that one.
Yes, Wii Music, Animal Crossing Wii. Like, it was such, every time you were watching it, you're like, well, something better is about to get announced, right? And then it's like, nope, that wasn't any better. The only thing good to come from that E3 was Epic Yarn from Kirby for sure. But I'm personally excited for some of the trailers that they showed off last year of games that we're not playing yet. And I think the only one that might be, well, other than Sharp FE, I guess, at this point, would be Metroid Prime Federation Force. I'm excited for it. Holly, I know you're kind of excited for it, too. We're both on the okay train on that. Like, we're willing to give it a shot and see what it is exactly, unlike some people on the internet, not naming any names. Everyone's
upset about the DLC, I guess. I don't know.
But, I don't know. It leaves something for me personally. Looking back a little bit, it makes me kind of sad. I don't know what else to say about it, but it is it's not going to be a good E3 this year. It's going to be a decent start, and then it's going to fill void, I feel.
Well, it could be worse, as Harrison pointed out.
That was a third-party game that year.
That's the same. I'm just saying, and not saying it could be worse, but if you had to choose a game to just showcase at E3, if you had one game, like say if Konami or something, like, which Konami, it's a shell of its former self right now. I mean, with the pachinko machines, that's a whole different thing to go to, and I just feel bad for Kojima. If Konami was going to put, what did they show if they have a huge boot? Metal Gear Solid. They have something like that. I mean, obviously they don't make console games. I mean, they're not a console maker, but with Nintendo, if you only had to choose one game to actually just show off, aside from Mario, a full-fledged 3D Mario game, a full-fledged, next installment of Zelda does the trick. I mean, that at least gets some attention out there.
But I don't think it's enough, though. Like, I really don't think that it's enough to showcase for 3 days worth of information that's supposed to be coming out.
But look at what E3 has basically become the last few years. I mean, you see different companies that are just bailing out on floor space just to get away from it, because E3 is not as lavish as it has been since the last couple of years, and I feel like it's going the same route as almost kind of like CES. CES is still important, but you don't see major companies like Apple or even major game companies going to CES anymore. They have their own separate events. It's the same thing with like these game companies when they unveil consoles. And I'm still one of the belief that, Nintendo wants to get away from that noise. Because think of it this way, if they unveiled NX and if it was like a really poorly showing, whatever it's like the, what was it, the PS 4.5 or the Xbox 1.2 that's announced, that will get lost in the shuffle or just gets a bad bit of like PR bonus. If you're able to, you know, single in, have an event yourself, be if it's direct or a live event out there, then itself that gets the pot, you know, all the eyes are everybody on you. It's not just in the back of the corner of people like, oh, Nintendo's got something new here? Wow, you have a singular event out here.
Yeah, I mean, it
does suck. It does suck that you don't have the glavish of E3 out there. But looking back at 2015 when we saw that, it shows basically what the state of Nintendo and what the state of the Wii U was at this point. Because
oh, yeah.
If you want to pinpoint the exact moment where Nintendo knew that this was going to be a very terrible like uphill climb for the Wii U, look no further than the first Direct of 2013, when essentially Nintendo just showed their entire cards out, whatever, like whether it was like they first unveiled Xenoblade X, they showed off, I believe, Wind Waker HD. They said a new Smash Brothers is going to be unveiled at you know, this upcoming E3. We're going to show off the new Mario Kart, the new Mario. That was essentially Nintendo showing off what, yeah, it was essentially vaporware, is the correct term for it. That was Nintendo just saying, all right, we're going to put our resources into our next console, like starting out like little bits of here, and we're just going to develop our teams here for what we can get for the Wii U and get a good experience for them. But at this point, what we saw early on, this is not looking like it's going
to
be good.
So I just want to say that I kind of disagree with you in the terms that you're saying that Mario Kart or Smash Brothers or Xenoblade Chronicles was vaporware. When those games were announced, that was actually them giving out their full ability to try and push the system to be capable of being something better than what it was on the road to be. That was them trying to do the same thing that they did with the Nintendo 3DS, because the 3DS was on the track to be a crap system that was going to turn out to be a failure. But they turned it around using good games and good marketing, and that's exactly what they tried to do at the Wii U. The problem was is that the public just did not buy into it, and I don't think they did a good job of showcasing what made it different about being on the Wii U. Now, when we go to the next year's E3, when we find out about things like Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival, that's when we start going into the vaporware. Mario Tennis, that is vaporware. Those are the most... Star Fox Zero is vaporware, and I don't care who I have to argue with about that. The fact that it's deprived of any sort of online leaderboards of any sort, or also online or multiplayer matches, is complete proof that that game was something that they're like, let's do our best effort because we have to get it out. But not.
I think we're getting a little bit misconstrued on the term of vaporware. I'm not saying in terms of like something that's bad.
Like,
I agree quality-wise, but you are saying... I agree that you're not saying that it's a negative towards the quality.
Oh, no. The only ones I would say that is in good terms of vaporware was like when they decide to just like, hey, here's Zelda and here's Xenoblade X. Vaporware is in terms of unveiling a product that is not, that does not have a release date yet, that's far off.
Yeah.
That's the term what I'm saying in terms of vaporware.
I feel like there might be a better word for it than vaporware, because I know what you mean.
Last Guardian or Shenmue 3, or even a rumored Mother 3 localization, that's called vaporware. Things that are announced, but they're not officially released here.
Mm-hmm.
That's vaporware. That's not in terms of... There is a negative stigma to saying vaporware, because that's just saying like, oh, you're revealing basically things that you did not want to reveal until later on, until it was completed. That's essentially what I'm saying in terms of vaporware.
Okay.
That's not a negative sense, whatever. It's just I feel like we're getting confused with shovelware.
maybe that's I'm thinking of it in just in terms of they're announcing a product that they know is not going to be good, but it's still something that they're using as a latch ditch effort, which I guess could be more considered shovelware, but. Moving on from that, because we've been going for a long time with it. I think we all agree that the last year's E3 was not terrible, right? It just felt a little lackluster overall, and it showed off things that we wanted to be better than what they were ever going to actually turn into being. Other than Super Mario Maker, for instance, which was totally awesome, and they did a lot of cool stuff with it. Some people obviously are enjoying Star Fox Zero, which is good for them. If you enjoy a game, don't listen to what anyone else says about it. Holly, I know that you enjoyed Triforce Heroes, for instance. So there was a lot of positive that came from the 2015 E3 overall. It just felt lackluster. Are we excited, you know, just to kind of finish this off, moving forward to 2016, we're about to hit E3 here in a couple more weeks. I mean, are we excited for what is going to be E3 2016?
I'm excited for Zelda. I mean, my E3 prediction bingo card is going to be easy.
Yeah, Zelda and Free Space.
Yeah. No. I'm just interested in how they're going to present it, because
I'll say, yeah.
Because with all that space that they have there, I mean, it was when they announced that Zelda was going to be the only playable game on the show floor. I was like, okay. When I heard that, I was like, that doesn't mean like, oh, they're going to still, you know, if it's not playable, that means they could still announce things. But I think still, in some cases, Nintendo was able to announce certain things out there, not necessarily with digital events, but you know, this is very interesting to see, you know, just, hey, if Nintendo is so confident with Zelda, this shows, like, okay, what they've been banking on in terms of, like, you know, changing series conventions, trying to flip, you know, the 3D model so it's not stale, then, yeah, they certainly do seem, I'm interested to see what it looks like and how it plays, because they certainly seem confident enough. I want to know if there's voice acting. I want to know if there's a gender option. I want to know how big this world is. I want to know what the title is. That's it, and where it fits in the timeline. So
yeah, there are plenty of surprises there, I feel like. And if Nintendo is basically, you know, putting all of its E3 hopes on this one game, there have to be some surprises, like I say, that they are going to reveal. And it has to be a, you know, good big game for them to put all their hopes on it, like I say. So yeah, I'd say I'm excited, but you know, the Zelda series is my favorite video game series too, so that's one of the hugest reasons why I'm excited. But I do understand that there probably are people out there who are like, you know, I like Zelda, but it's not my favorite. I would like some other things. And
three
so
days
to you people,
is going to be very tiring.
Tiring. I, you know what, I'll watch like whatever they have that is going to reveal like the title and some of the unique functions. I have never cared that much to watch other people play games, even if those games aren't out yet. So Treehouse Live has never been my favorite thing.
I really like Treehouse Live the past couple of years. The first year they did, I thought was a really cool idea. It was way under the radar the first time. The second time, they did a great job of announcing games on it and then showcasing features and then talking to developers and talking about indie games. I mean, there were just some really cool things that were showed off, and I felt like this is the way that E3 is going to go in the future with the Treehouse Live stuff. Now it is the future of E3 for Nintendo is Treehouse Live, but as a fan of Nintendo, but not as like the biggest Zelda fan, my whole thing is like there's a part of me that's just like, well, you know, they could still like announce other stuff like in between times, right? Right?
You're just holding on to a hope.
I am holding on to a big prayer.
This is basically, you know, we're Nintendo fans, yeah, we're gonna have to suffer through a short term. But for the optimism and success of the long term going forward for what we see, you know, from Wii U beyond and going towards the NX. But I want to see how basically these first few hours of this new Zelda turn out, because like I said, you know, the formula is stale and I want to get beyond the hand holding aspects of what the 3D Zelda titles have done so far. I want to see, and those first few hours are practically, I'm going to admit, the worst parts of a 3D Zelda.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if we'll see that. I don't know if we'll see that in. There's 3 days, so they better fill it with something. But we filled you guys up with your ears with enough of this Nintendo nonsense. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to us. Of course, you can always reach us at our email address, podcast@nintendofever.com. Ooh, I got
Matt
it out.
Just got it right.
I got it right. Please get ready because we will be having a predictions podcast, regardless of the fact that we already know everything that's going to be there. Boy, oh boy, are me and Holly going to think of some fun rumors. I know we can do it, Holly. But yes, of course, reach us at our email address. You can always find us on Twitter as well. Find the official Nintendo Fever Twitter handle at Nintendo Fever, where you can tweet at us. And also don't forget about our hashtags at NF or hashtag NF Game Club and hashtag NF Pokemon for all your Pokemon and crazy game stuff that you're doing in your life of living, you know, tweeting stuff. You can find Harrison, I would imagine, has a Twitter handle. What is your Twitter handle, good sir?
Twitter. Yes, you can find me online, and you can find me rambling on about whether it's the world of gaming, my current obsession with hockey, or other things in the world of journalism at H. Milfeld. That's spelled H-M-I-L-F-E-L-D, as in dog. And do you guys give out Miiverse handles at all up here?
We do sometimes. I'm at my limit, I think, or I'm really close to, and I know Holly's usually at her limit, so we usually don't. But if you have one and you're looking for some friends to play games with, please do.
Yeah, I'm checking right now. Oh, my limit is not up. So, I am, this is all one word. It's hybrid meta, HYBRIDMETA.
That is an awesome, handle.
You don't want to know. It's a combination of basically, you know, from Meta Ridley and what was it? I was like 13 when I happened. And for some reason I looked through my albums and I was like, oh, Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory was up there. It's like, oh, hybrid sounds really good. And
I was going to say, it sounds like the it sounds like the most 13-year-old handle ever, but like it sounds awesome. Like the 13-year-old me is like, this guy's like really cool. It's awesome. But
I'm not going to dare give away my Miiverse handle then.
I like Aeromyth. That's pretty cool too.
Aeroweth
is what I said. You can't prove me wrong, even if this was recorded on a podcast. But Holly is also on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
At Holly Felmyth. Now I hope you know how to spell that.
I believe everybody does. It's a Holly and then Fell and
I'm
then
everywhere.
Meth. So we
if you remember that.
I always think of it like math, only there's one letter that's different.
Okay. There's another way you could think of it, but
I don't even know what you're talking about. Breaking Bad. We're going to go ahead and end the show right now. Thank you so much for listening. Get ready for the podcast about predictions and E3 talk, because that's all coming up, and I'm sure we'll have some juicy rumors for next week. If you have questions, concerns, comments, or anything above and beyond that, just email them or Twitter us at them. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but we're out of here for now, so we'll catch you the next time we're all done playing our video games.
See you guys.
Salutations, or goodbye. Well.